morning. My name is Stanley Campbell, and I am here on behalf of Tommy Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell's contention is that, first of all, the trial court erred in its determination that he consented to the search of his apartment. He has three things that he would point to in support of the proposition that his testimony was more credible than that of the police officers. The first of those...
Arguments like this go nowhere in an appellate court. As I'm sure you know, we don't reassess the credibility of witnesses.
Would you prefer that I move on to the second argument in terms of the... involuntariness of the consent?
Well, you can apply your time as okay. You think best.
Well, his argument is that the court should have believed his account for three reasons that make it clearly erroneous. Number one is the corroborative testimony of witnesses Roos and Swan, that they heard him say that he did not consent to the search of his apartment and that police should get a warrant. Second is the logic of his allowing the police to search his van, knowing there was nothing contained in the van, but his refusal to allow them to search his apartment because of his knowledge that there were both guns and drugs in that apartment. And third is the testimony regarding the approach of his apartment by the police officers. They're knocking on the door, and they're announcing that they were census workers and wanting to talk to him about the census. Although the police initially denied that, there was some testimony that would be supportive of Mr. Mitchell in that regard.
Did the police use that, I'll call it tactic, on other occasions?
Yes. Officer Crapser, I believe, testified under cross-examination that was a tactic that had been used in other occasions. He was a little nebulous on whether or not it had been used in this instance. But the fact that it had been used by them in the past, and Mr. Mitchell would not have any knowledge of that, lends credibility to his account that was the approach that we used when they did come to his apartment to knock on the door.
So it's also possible that word was on the street, too.
I'm sorry?
That was a tactic that was used with others, and then maybe the word on the street would be...
That's certainly a possibility. That certainly is. I can't discount that. But there was no testimony in this case that Mr. Mitchell had any awareness of that tactic being employed by the police. Insofar as the second argument is concerned, that the consent was not voluntarily made, if in fact there was a consent, there are again three factors that Mr. Mitchell would like the court to consider. One of those is the notion that he was handcuffed, he was in custody at the time of the questioning and the request for the consent, making it inherently coercive. Secondly is the notion that he was not told of his rights regarding the search. He was not told that he could refuse to consent. He was not told that he could require the police to obtain a search warrant, nor was he advised that he was entitled to consult with an attorney prior to his giving his consent. We understand that there is no requirement to that effect under the federal constitution. There is a requirement under the Indiana constitution as interpreted by the Indiana Supreme Court in the Pirtle case. And we would suggest that is a significant factor that ought to be considered by the court in weighing the considerations as to whether or not this consent is voluntary. The third factor that Mr. Mitchell would like the court to consider is the manner in which as the court described, investigatory stop that blossomed then into a detention occurred. And our argument there is that there was certainly no probable cause to suspect him of any criminal activity, nor was there any well-founded suspicion that would have led to the ability of the police to conduct any investigatory stop. They were, as they phrased it, conducting a narcotics investigation. At best, what they saw was Mr. Mitchell coming out of a house which they described as a known drug house without any supporting evidence. He then drives to a place in Fort Wayne outside a Wildwood liquor store where he parks. He leaves their site for a few minutes, comes back, gets in his car, and continues on to his apartment where he goes inside. And during the course of the examination,
Didn't the officers identify themselves as officers before they entered his household?
They did, yes. Once Mr. Mitchell was outside and they approached him, they did identify themselves as police officers.
Was this speeding? Was that just a ruse?
Well, that would be our contention. I don't think they were much interested in his speeding, and there are a couple of things that argue in that direction. First of all, the testimony of Officer Bobay was the one that was sitting on the drug house. He was the one that saw Mr. Mitchell come out. He's undercover. He's in plain clothes, unmarked car. And what he said was that he tried to get a uniformed narcotics detective to conduct a traffic stop to stop Mr. Mitchell. And our argument would be the hope was, having come from a drug house, they would make a traffic stop, and then they would do a search and find drugs. The significance here is that he's wanting to get a uniformed narcotics detective to conduct the traffic stop. He doesn't radio into dispatch asking any old patrol officer who might be in the neighborhood to make the stop based upon what he says happened, that Mr. Mitchell was speeding. Unfortunately for him, the uniformed narcotics detective, Detective Crapser, wasn't in the area. He was somewhere on the other side of town. He isn't able to meet up with Detective Bobay until they arrive at Mitchell's apartment where he goes inside. So they haven't been able to effectuate this traffic stop. And in the course of the testimony, it's also pretty clear from the officers that what they were conducting was a narcotics investigation. That was, when they approached Mr. Mitchell, that was the information they gave to him. We're conducting a narcotics investigation. We need to see your driver's license. And the hope, obviously, was that in checking the driver's license, they would find that there was an outstanding warrant for him, be able to take him into custody. What they found instead was that he was a driver with a suspended license.
Did he raise this in the trial court?
I'm sorry?
Did he raise this issue in the trial court?
In our suppression hearing, yes.
Regarding this search of his apartment?
In the federal court? Yes, we did, yes. Coincidentally, he was charged in the state court with possession of the drugs that they found in the apartment. And in that case, there was a motion to suppress that resulted in that case being dismissed.
Isn't it true, though, or what is your theory, when an individual is driving with a suspended license and the officer pulls him over to interrogate him, don't you think that they have the authority at that time to take him into custody?
Yes.
All right, when they take him into custody, is it improper for them to ask if they can search his vehicle or his house?
No.
It isn't?
Well, it wouldn't be improper of them to ask to search his car. In fact, they would end up searching the car because unless there were a licensed driver in the car, it would end up getting towed.
Now, if they saw him coming out of a drug house, as they said, would it be improper for them to ask if they could search the house?
The house, I would suggest that there would not be any well-founded suspicion or probable cause that would justify them in asking for a search of the house.
Of his house?
Of his house, yes. Simply coming out of a house that they conclude is a known drug house, I would suggest is not enough.
Once he gave consent to the search, did they have to have reasonable cause?
No.
Know what?
consent...
Right, waives it.
Well, yes, if a person consents to a search, then obviously the police are entitled to conduct that search. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Philip Simon and I represent the government in this matter. The issue presented is whether or not the defendant consented to the search of his apartment, and if he did, whether or not that was the product of a knowing and voluntary choice versus some action that was coercive by the police. On the first facet of that question, was there consent? There were three police officers who testified that the defendant was specifically asked, do you mind if we search your apartment? And the defendant said, go ahead. There's nothing in there that I have to hide. I'm not concerned with anything, or words to that effect. There was a fourth witness, a totally independent witness, who was a neighbor, who corroborated what the three police officers said. On the other side of the equation, there were two witnesses, in addition to the defendant, who testified that he did not give consent. And these two witnesses heard just a snippet of the conversation and said that they heard only the defendant saying, I heard the defendant say, you need a warrant to do that. So that's what the district court judge was faced with in this case. And of course, the district court judge had to make a credibility determination. And what the district court in this case specifically found was that the following. The court, after considering the testimony and weighing the interest of the witnesses and their demeanor, specifically finds that the version of the events as recounted by the government witnesses to be much more credible than that presented by the defendant. So the bottom line here is that the district court made a credibility determination, found the government's witnesses to be more credible, and as the court has already acknowledged through its questioning, that's an issue that can virtually never be clear error. So we have to sort of take as fact that the defendant consented to the search. The question then is, was that consent free and voluntarily given, or was it the product of some sort of police coercion? The Supreme Court has set forth a number of factors that this court and the district courts are to take into consideration in determining if the consent was voluntary, in looking at sort of the totality of the circumstances. Those factors are the age, intelligence, and education of the defendant. In this case, the defendant was 47 years old, had a 12th grade education, could read, write English, had lots of experience with the criminal justice system. Was he advised of his constitutional rights? The district court found that he was. What was the length of the detention? It was a very short detention prior to him giving his consent. Was the consent done immediately, or was it after repeated questioning by the police? And the evidence in the district court and what the district court found as fact was that it was an immediate consent. Was there any physical coercion, any kind of threats? The district court found that there was not. There were three police officers. There was no guns drawn. There was no abusive language. There was no loud or angry questioning.
Was he in cuffs?
He was. And that's the last factor that the court has to consider. Was he in custody? And we concede that he was in custody. He was in cuffs. So those are the factors that the court had to take into consideration. And except for that last factor, whether he was in custody, all of the other factors in this case militate in favor of finding that the defendant made a free and voluntary choice to allow the police officers to search his apartment.
Well, is the person in cuffs free and voluntary? Can he leave?
Well, he's certainly not free to leave, but he's certainly free to tell the police officers, get lost, you need a search warrant, I'm not consenting to the search. And in this case, he, while being in custody, he said, you have my consent. And again, that's just one factor in the totality of circumstances that this court has to consider. The government believes that the record is clear in this case, that the district court made no error, clear or otherwise, in finding in the totality of circumstances that the defendant knowingly and voluntarily waived his right to a search warrant, knowingly consented to a search, and we ask that this court affirm the district court's finding. Unless the court has any questions for me, I'll yield back the balance of my time and ask that the judgment be affirmed.
So, do you want to answer anything? All right. This court will take this case under advisement. Thank you both for your help.